Gaming on Linux podcast, or GOL podcast for short. I am one of the hosts, Matthew Cross, also known as Dark1778, and with me we have a fine group of gentlemen from the community who have decided to step up and see how the insanity will go. So guys, why don't you introduce yourselves?
Hi, my name is Cheese. I have been a writer for Gaming on Linux for a couple of years now. Been a Linux user since 2006, I think it was. So a game developer as well. Do all of my programming on Linux.
Do you know, that means we have perspective.
And conflict of interest.
We're not biased at all. Well, hi, my name is Kieran, or Mad Machinations. You'll probably see me knocking about the GOL IRC channel quite a bit. I am an indie developer, and I've been a Linux user since about 2003, I think it was, shortly after Fedora Core 1 came out.
Fair enough. Hi. Well, I am Golestophilus, or Gola, whatever you like to call me. I've been a Linux user since, I don't know, 2009, 10 maybe. Been distro hopping a lot, from Ubuntu to Fedora to CentOS even, and now I'm on Arch. Basically, I like to play on Linux.
So, in other words, you like to game on Linux.
Yeah. And I really like to flip off the Microsoft, so it's kind of my deal.
Who doesn't?
Oh, like 2006 was when I stopped dual booting. I think I'd been using Linux already for a couple of years, and I was like, yeah, I just don't need this anymore. It's not worth it.
I was going to say, for me, obviously I didn't get any background on my Nix experience, sorry. Mandrake, for those that really, really want to know. Hello, people from Windows world who used to complain about DLL hell, RPM dependency hell. And people want to know why I do not like RPM-based distros, for no offense to those that do. Awesome, great, not my company.
It's still the same kind of dependency that every other distro has. Like, at that time, people were still learning how package management was going to...
Sorry, I will be the practical user here. I don't care whether or not it's free software or whatnot. Best tool for the job. I will have a unique perspective amongst the group. I still do this weird thing, and I still use every OS. Yes, even Windows and OS X.
The date that we're recording this is Sunday the 13th of March. Just in case anything exciting happens between now and publishing that we don't mention, we're not intentionally ignoring it.
But, you know, so that's a little background on us, our Linux experience. What games are we all playing currently, though, on Linux?
It's a really, really tough one, actually. Recently, I purchased myself a Wii U, and as strange as it sounds...
Gaming on Linux, episode one.
Yeah, I'm going to start the Wii U. I was going to say, at least if you said PlayStation 4, you could say you installed Linux on it.
Oh, man, forgot that one.
Has anyone installed Linux on a Wii U before? Like, is that doable? Surely someone's tried it.
They have put Linux on Stranger Things.
Been playing those Wii U games, trying to complete them, as at least those which are worth completing. But when coming back to the Linux world, then basically I do have a couple of games which I am currently running. Spec Ops The Line, actually. I've come back to that. I've never actually completed it. But now I thought that I should really give it a go. Alien Isolation, War for the Overworld, actually. If anyone hasn't played it, then please do. It's awesome. It's old school Dungeon Keeper all over again. It's so awesome. And also the new Agatha Christie, the ABC Murders. I just got it because it's Hercule Boreal, or however you want to pronounce it. So I thought it would be a nice game to play with a significant other, you know, just something to puzzle your mind with. Generally, one game that has my complete attention right now is Dirt Rally, as we seriously lack a good rally game in the Linux community right now. And as it's showing kind of signs in the Steam database that it might hit Linux, well, I'm hyped. I'm totally hyped about that.
I've been sort of jumping between games over the last week. I guess recently I've spent the most time on Bound by Flame and Sunless Sea, which is kicking my ass up and down the show. And as of yesterday now, Super Happy Fun Sun, which is... one of Cheese games, which is ridiculous. I am way too ham-fisted with the controls. I must learn to find some patience there and take my time with it. Sun of the Sea, I think, is probably the most interesting one that I've been messing about with recently. It's also,
Sun of the Sea is more interesting than Super Happy Fun Sun.
It is. In Super Happy Fun Sun, your crew will smash through the bridge and, you know, murder you. So it just seems to have quite the learning curve. I say learning curve, obviously it's a simple enough game, but, you know, you will die a lot finding your way to, you know, an approach that actually works for you. I've got a little bit better with each subsequent playthrough, but I do still die very quickly. The last time was all terror and starvation and whatnot. It did not go well, but I will persevere and I will survive at least a week in that game if it kills me.
I'm hoping figuratively and not literally, at least as far as gameplay is concerned.
Probably literally. Depends how much caffeine I have to stay awake. I might have a heart attack or something. That could go south pretty quickly.
Kieran, you mentioned Bound by Flame as well. Actually, this brings to mind that when Bound by Flame was actually released for Linux, I had not heard anything about the game prior to that. And when the Gaming on Linux live stream hit and they started playing it, I was like, wow. Now, this is like the next generation graphics hitting Linux. Looks absolutely stunning. But the difficulty, it's so awesome throughout the game. It's you crank it up to the maximum and you play it like basically like Witcher games. So it's all down in my alley. But then the very last boss that the game has, it just throws a huge middle finger at you saying that, nope, you're not passing this. I tried for a week, just this one boss. Then I got so frustrated, I just erased everything off my hard drive, which we revolved around that game. So that was a huge, huge disappointment. And I still haven't spoiled myself the ending credits video.
It's definitely a nice game. I've only got about 2.5-3 hours into it so far, but I am enjoying it, to say the least. I think I actually enjoy it more than I enjoy The Witcher 2, and I think I detect a hint of Dark Souls inspiration in there somewhere, but it's definitely fun. It is compelling and keeps me coming back every time. It kicks my ass. I haven't tried it on the most difficult setting, though. Not yet, anyway. I'll probably give that a go the next time I get around to it.
I'm glad they fixed the controller support and the issues that were initially there in their first release for Linux. So.
As far as stuff that I've had time to sit down and play through this year, I finished A Good Snowman is Hard to Build, which is this awesome little puzzle game inspired by Sokoban and that Tower of Hanoi puzzle. Where you've got to roll snowballs around on, you know, fresh grass and stuff, and then stack them up. If you roll it too big, you can't stack them. If you roll it through snow, then it's going to grow bigger. So you've got to kind of manage how you move everything around. It's made by the same guy that made Soccer Bond, if I remember correctly. It is super cute as well, and it's kind of it's accessible on a bunch of different levels. You can kind of feel like you've finished the game, but and you know, if you're not that into it, you can just step away at that point and feel satisfied. But if you are really into it, there's a lot of deeper puzzles that you can kind of find and work your way through. I was really impressed by that game. The other one that I've finished this year is Firewatch, which is a kind of first person adventure game, narrative driven thing.
As far as me, when you have over 600 PC games, it is really hard to actually buckle that and play one game. Counting all my GOG games, my Steam games, and my EA Origin games. But we're talking Linux here. So my Nix partitions that I've been playing, I've been playing Deadfall Adventures. Good game. I wish they would update some of the stuff so that all the shaders aren't drawing for 4 minutes when you first load the game, but that'd be great. Another one is called Cradle. That is a experience. Thus far, it is technology has overtaken everything and really unique to it.
That's another kind of adventure game-esque type thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be part of its, at first you feel like it's going to be just kind of like a gone home. You're viewing things from the past. Then as you kind of go along, it feels kind of like Firewatch, where it feels like it's you're actually an active participant in the current. So it gives you a lot of backstory and a lot of that way with the Gone Home vibe, but it also there's more to it when you get to the certain point within the game. And another game I've been playing a lot of is one called Dex. Which is a sprite, like a 2.5D sprite cyberpunk action role-playing game. It's like a side-scroller, but open world. The game is actually really good. I really enjoy it. You guys can get it.
Yeah, it's been on my radar for a while.
I got it actually because I enjoyed the music more than anything else. The music's freaking awesome. I love it. Those are pretty much the games that I've invested the most time in. I've also been playing Shadowrun Chronicles, Boston Lockdown. I've also been playing Dreamfall Chapters. I've also been playing. Problem is, like, I'll get 20 minutes, and it's like, all right, I'm going to sit down and play a game. So it's like, which one can I play within a 20-minute burst?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it. I mean, I only listed the games that I finished this year. I played a lot of other stuff as well.
But that is what I've been playing for the most part. But I've really enjoyed Cradle probably the most thus far. Okay, so talked about us a little bit, what we play. As far as show structure, for those that kind of want to know how this is going to work, we're looking at doing the format is you'll have these introduction portions, then you'll have a kind of a roundtable news section that we just kind of pull stories from Gaming on Linux that either the community contribute we find, and that kind of tie into the overall show topic. The one that we have today very much does tie into to the show, which, for those that are wondering, this is Linux as a gaming platform, all the pros and all the cons. With that said, let's kind of go into the first portion of the news that we found. Some would say disturbing, some would say questioning, but ties into the show.
I think it's funny.
Right. The first one I'm going to look up is Stainless Steel Games and the wreck that it has, the PR wreck that it is with Linux and Mac gamers right now. Oh my God. We're gonna do a Kickstarter. Promise Linux and Mac support. Then we're going to do a Windows version, announce another game, and still not deliver on the first one. That about sums that up.
Man, I was so pissed out of them. Basically, when I checked that the next Carmageddon title was going to be released, I was so hyped. Finally, man, we got the Carmageddon 1, we had the expansions, then, well, obviously not on Linux, but but generally, we had Karma 2, and then there was the underdog TDR 2000. But when the Kickstarter noted that, okay, when we're going to hit this mark, and they were so close to hitting it, and that they're going to release macOS and Linux versions, I was like, ooh. God damn it, yeah, hell yeah, I'm in. I'm going to back them up. So I got all my games, and there was silence. And then I went to their forums, and I asked them, again, and they said, no, we don't have time for that right now. We're just waiting for things to evolve. So we need to figure out the bug fixes and release betas on Windows and fix those first. And when that was kind of done, the Windows version was crappy. It has so many issues. But it was released, so I asked them again, like, what's going on, guys? Where is the Linux beta? When can we expect it? And then they replied, oh, well, we're kind of expecting that maybe Vulkan will release, and maybe we can do that kind of thing. But now there's absolute radio silence, and now when this news hit that they're already working on another title, then yeah, that kind of pissed me off because I cannot get a refund anymore from Steam.
I mean, it's got to feel pretty sour for Linux supporters, but at the same time, like, if it's tricky for a studio to continue existing when they don't have new stuff on the go. Like, it could be that they've entered into a publishing agreement and that's gotten the money that lets them keep the doors open. And if they didn't do that, they might have gone bankrupt and not been able to do a Linux version at all.
Yeah, but for those that...
But at the same time, you know, if you've made a commitment, you know, you can't just ignore your customers like that.
I was going to say, and the thing is, the Kickstarter, the expectations are higher from people who back Kickstarter projects.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, you're invested, right?
You're invested, and it's understandable that, you know, he would be, as a customer or as an investor, something that was promised wasn't delivered, of course you're going to be pissed. And that is understandable. Now, I will caveat this, that it depends, just because the Stainless Steel announced that they were going forward with another project doesn't mean that the entire team is. A certain segment of the team might be. This is how most studios work once they get something going. I know this is, for those that want like a clear transparency of how most studios will do this, look at something like InXile with how they've done all their Kickstarters. One team winds down, they'll do another Kickstarter so that the other team has work to continue. That's pretty much how most developmental studios roll.
Let's just hope that they still have a few guys working on that one. But the indications that they made with starting another game already made me kind of more cautious about pre-ordering and backing up the Kickstarter projects in the future.
Is good to have, though. Like, it's kind of healthy to make sure that you're being careful and thoughtful. I mean, this situation definitely sucks, and it shouldn't have ended up this way, but it is good to think about it.
Yeah.
Whether or not believe that these people have the experience and the understanding to actually be able to or realize the promises that they've made.
This particular topic example can fall on other studios who have done a very good job of, once they've actually ported the game, is Laird Studios with Divinity. Same deal. I mean, really, if you look at it, they waited, what, a year? Over a year to finally release the Linux version. It runs great, not going to lie. The port is amazing. It's probably one of the best ports that I've had outside of probably Wasteland and Pillars of Eternity.
Well, they're both using Unity, aren't they?
Yeah, but Unity has its own issues, and you know that.
yeah, but it's a different story to, like, porting your own engine, right? Like, it's a very different kind of work.
But still, the point is that as far as, like, a built-in port of it in and of itself, it is very well made. The fact is they hamstrung Linux users who backed them for over a year saying, oh, yeah, we'll get to it, basically. And come to find out, it ended up being a middleware thing that they ended up having to recompile and basically build their own middleware engine for it or something.
Well, that's the situation that a lot of people end up finding themselves in when they do their crowdfunding campaigns or when they initially announce stuff. They go, yeah, the engine we're using supports Linux, but they don't make thoughtful decisions about what they're using as far as middleware goes, and that comes back to bite them later in. I mean, that as far as what we know about Unreal Tournament 3, for example, you know, it seems like it was a middleware licensing issue that was holding things up. And it's like, that stuff's easy to overlook for developers. I think developers need to spend a bit more time investigating whether or not Linux support is the right match for them before they commit to it. And that they may, you know, keep that in mind when they're making the middleware choices.
Pick your thoroughly research your supported platforms. Find the
tools. It's not just about like kind of going, yeah, because you do. You, as far as supporting Windows go, oh, you go, all right, my engine supports Windows. I don't need to think about it anymore. But when you're supporting something like Linux and Mac OS as well, you know, the things that aren't the de facto standard at the moment, you kind of do need to kind of go, well, it's bigger than just the engine. It's all the other little dependencies and bits and pieces that people take for granted.
The main pitfall that they've fallen into that other developers should do their best to try and avoid is a total lack of communication. If you're more open about what you're doing and what problems you're having, then people will understand and they will wait forever and a day. I know, I mean, obviously as a developer myself, I know that at least I do, a lot of other developers, we don't really care for communication. We like to seal ourselves into a corner and code furiously until it's done.
I was going to say, developers, there is a reason they say go to the basement.
I think that it's a larger problem. It's very important to be open about where you're up to with things and what you're doing, especially when crowdfunding is involved, because you know people have thrown money at you, and you know it is entirely a risk to them. So it is very important. It's not like you're just developing something from your own finances then to release it and hopefully recover those losses. It's a completely different ball game where the communication becomes really, really important.
And that's the thing, like, if you don't tell people what's going on, you leave it up to their imaginations, and their imaginations are invariably going to paint you pretty poorly.
Oh, definitely. Especially where Linux is involved. I mean, a lot of, especially the older Linux users, they're probably quite accustomed to Linux being kicked around a bit by people, say it's not worth it, you know, no one uses it, etc., etc. And I think a lot of Linux users are still quite raw about all that, and they will jump straight away to that you don't give a shit and that you're not taking them seriously. But at the same time, Linux users really do need to sort of try and scale back the rage. We don't want to get known as
anything.
It doesn't, no. You know, if things like that continue, then you know, we don't want to get known as a community of users that are just really, really angry and, you know, bigoted.
This is probably the worst thing. some people aren't going to like my take on this. Some of the worst elements of a gamer is the community.
I don't even know if gamers are... Like, everybody plays games, right?
Well,
pervasive now.
It is, but what I'm talking... Okay, sorry. I hate using the term casual and hardcore gamer. The people who are the ones likely to visit places like this or IGN or GameSpot, you know, people who are really hardcore gaming fans and really into the industry and all this other stuff, because those are really the people who are going to visit these kind of sites. I mean, let's just be honest. That is the demographic. Is it pervasive among what is considered a hardcore gamer now? Yeah, that audience has expanded to, like, stupid levels now, I'm not going to lie. But there is an aspect of, like, the online gaming community that is just terrible crap. Play Xbox Live, PSN, whatever, you know.
See, this is, when we were talking about pros and cons, I was, like, debating whether I should put this on there, but I'm kind of glad that we don't have lots of the games that have these toxic communities. I'm like,
yes.
I'm glad that they're not on Linux.
But this is...
talking about Dota.
this is where I'm going with it. But the Linux community has its elements that can be just as bad in the community.
It's actually kind of really sad, because at the top, you know, like, everybody likes to celebrate Linus when he's being a toxic asshole. And that as a culture, you know, that cascades down a little bit. People embrace and love that stuff, whereas it's not really helpful for anybody. It doesn't really get anybody anywhere useful other than very short-term quick laughs.
It is funny. Anyway.
I'm not going to lie.
He's really nice in person, which is, like, shockingly contrasting.
I was going to say, I'm not going to lie. I loved it when he flipped off NVIDIA. Thank you for better drivers, NVIDIA, because of Linus.
Linus should really flip off AMD now. And Diesel Skylake.
Well, we can talk about AMD, and that would be a whole show in and of itself in one new segment. Long story short is AMD is doing at least a better job with their open source efforts. I will give them that. Mm. Their proprietary drivers suck ass.
Although, isn't the new Catalyst that they're putting out, isn't that supposed to have proprietary blobs going on in it? I know it's going to be built on AMD GPU, but it's still technically a proprietary set, isn't it?
Yes, but they have not released it for Linux.
No. Which is, as usual.
Okay, usable version. Yes, you are correct.
One last thought on this whole kind of, like, committing to Linux and then not necessarily being, or to, you know, announcing Linux support and then not necessarily being able to deliver in a timely manner. Like, sometimes you've got to accept, and this comes back to communication. If you can communicate this, it's a lot easier for everyone to swallow. But sometimes the right business decision is to not prioritize every platform. Sometimes the right decision is to ship one thing that's going to sell better and get more money in and allow you to finish doing the other stuff. Like, sometimes that's the best decision to make. Sometimes that, in the long run, is better for Linux users as well to have a little bit of a delay there. But as Kieran was saying, you really got to communicate that. And it's fair to kind of expect that there's going to be some level of communication if something has already been announced.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, but there is just, I have one, let's say, not so good example, or actually it's a very good example of miscommunication, or, well, missing case of communication, which is The Witcher 3, which I'm a huge fan of. I've played 40 hours already on a Windows, but now that I don't have a Windows partition anymore, now I'm locked out. So basically, we have Witcher 1 using Wine, which works pretty okay, sometimes even better than on Windows, ever since when it came out. So we have Witcher 2, which, when it came out, it was a horrible port, but now it's actually runs pretty damn well. But regarding The Witcher 3, you guys all remember the controversy when they first announced Witcher on the Steam OS, and then the picture was taken down, and CD Projekt Red simply said that we had nothing to do with it. It was
we have nothing to say at this time about.
Yeah, and until this day, so
could
there
that have
is
been
no
an accident?
Answer.
And could that have been an accident? Like, if that's
no.
Yeah, I mean, if they turn around and say, you know, if they're undecided about whether or not they're going to support Linux, turning around and saying today, no, there are no plans, is going to hurt them more than not saying anything until they're ready to announce it.
Yeah, that is kind of true. But I do remember one, it was kind of like the GOG show when the CG Projekt Red guys were sitting together with the GOG guys, because they're basically the one team. And when they announced the GOG Galaxy, they also mentioned, they talked about Witcher 3. And there were some hints that basically, we're thinking about expanding the platforms towards Linux as well. Now,
I wonder if they're holding off until they've got Galaxy ready for Linux. I wonder if that's like a thing. They want to like launch Witcher 3 for Linux with the client for Linux in the hopes of like capturing that Linux audience.
That would be awesome, actually, the DRM-free variant of it. But at the same time, we have heard nothing about the Linux GOG Galaxy client as well. So that's kind of
That has been announced, though, hasn't it?
The Windows version is still in a beta. So I mean, they basically it said that they're gonna launch on Windows, then they would do OS X and Linux.
Yeah, I've used the Mac version a little bit. And it's okay, I guess. Their approach to updating is certainly far more sensible than Steam.
Yes, communication developers is important. Even if it's bad news, gamers would rather have news than no news, especially if they're backers of a project that they gave you money for well ahead of time, like 3 years ago.
Right. Like I was saying earlier, like bad news is bad, right? But it's not going to be as bad as what people imagine. If you don't tell them what's going on,
people's imaginations are going to be their worst thing that you can let run rampant because of your lack of communication. And that is really the key.
Yep.
If you end up saying you're going to support Linux and you end up not being able to, at least tell your customers and say those that are Linux users, ask for a fucking refund, whatever.
Well, the sooner you tell them, the happier everyone is. You know, if it's going to be canceled, let people know early. And then if you change your mind, I guess you got a pleasant surprise for them later on.
Example, don't do a Batman Arkham Knight.
Well,
but we're not going to go into the whole mess that game is. The point is, don't announce it. Don't announce it and say, you know, and just kind of completely ignore the topic when it gets brought up. This is rumor and speculation. I'll caveat this so that people don't assume that we are announcing that Tomb Raider 2013 is coming to Linux.
Woo!
SteamDB makes it look like.
Is this the one where they call Lara Croft Laura?
Depends which character talks. If it's the English ones, it's pronounced Lara. If it's
Laura.
If it's the American characters, it's not Laura.
Jeez. You think they could get that right? It's been long enough, right?
I mean, the guess and no. Anyway. According to SteamDB, there has been changes registered that the 2013 Definitive Edition, I believe, for Tomb Raider is coming out for Linux. If you look at the OS list change, it adds Linux with a install bash or install script.
It also has Linux depots, which have actual content in them.
Yeah. This also brings into question another story related to the publisher of said game, which is Square Enix, or Squeenix, as most gamers would call it. They also dipped their toe into Linux gaming with Hitman go.
For some reason.
In the blue.
Okay, right, good. I think there's like two factors here. So Feral look like they might be doing the Tomb Raider port, just having a quick scroll down the branches here. I think they possibly did a Mac port as well. Whereas Hitman Go was made in Unity, and providing they didn't have any middleware hurdles, they can click a button and potentially have it running straight away.
It is a bit of an odd one. I didn't look at it. I got really excited, and I thought, Square Enix, maybe they're going to, appear with some Final Fantasy games or something. That'll make a lot of people happy. But we get a shite mobile game.
We get a shit mobile game with...
It actually looks kind of neat. Like, it's not Hitman. If you want Hitman, it's not going to make you happy. But if you're, like, after a little kind of board game-esque strategy title, it looks okay.
The game, it's actually, good. It has
good
some...
for a mobile game. Trying to put it on a PC is not the same thing. And that's just my take on it, having played it.
So, Kale, have you played it?
Yeah, I have, actually. Whenever it was released, I immediately purchased it because...
I'm sorry.
trust me, I was not hyped about this. But I wanted to give it a go, and it was cheap as hell. So I got it, and I found a bug within the first hour. So I had my laptop in my lap, and I tested it out with one screen resolution. I placed the laptop in a dock, which now had 1080p resolution. And what do you know? It just stretched the game, and no way to change the resolution. So I opened up the forum ticket about this, and there were some guys arguing with me. No, look at it. It's right there. You click the settings. Are you kidding me? It's right there. So I sent the screenshot. Obviously, the Linux version lacks the option to change resolution, which is brilliant.
Wow.
We went through the config files and changed it manually, then it works, so it's like, what?
That's pretty cool.
Great job on the exporting for a Unity game.
We are in 2016, for God's sake. Don't press that port now button.
It's funny, though. It is not uncommon for Unity games to have issues on multi-headed desktops, where like developers thinking that they're trying to be clever rather than using Unity's automatic resolution detection stuff. They detect the desktop resolution and then try and set the screen to a full screen exclusive mode on that, which is, if you're running two monitors, it's going to get the whole desktop and then try and do that resolution on one screen.
Thank you, Strike 2-0.
It is so funny that developers seem... I mean, there must be some example somewhere that everybody's copying and pasting because it doesn't make sense to do that at all. Like, the only time you want to change the resolution is when the user asks for a different resolution, or you use whatever's in the config file. It's funny. I'm pretty sure there must be an example project or some kind of tutorial or something out there that developers are just copy and pasting crap from. But there have been a few titles where I've helped developers through that particular issue. But it's amazing that so many people do it.
Yeah, but does this mean that Square might actually look at developing title or putting titles to Linux? I mean, you already have Capcom announcing Street Fighter V. First, no, let me rephrase this. For SteamOS, they did not mention a quote-unquote Linux.
So, well, that's been long in the works. Like, that's been coming for a long time.
Yeah, but, it's one of those things where I think it's the more that other porting houses like Feral or Aspyr or any of those other guys show that there is a viable market, I think you're going to see more publishers being willing to potentially take the risk, even if it's only for like one game. But
I think it's good that they went, well, we've got the option, let's try it. And it's kind of sad that it's not necessarily sounding like it's giving everybody a good experience, but that they were willing to experiment says something, at least.
Systemic issue as a Windows game, person who uses Windows and games on Windows and OS X and Linux. This is a systemic issue across the board. Japanese developers have a hard time with PC ports in general. Look at the first Dark Souls. The controls are complete and utter crap on the PC version. Terrible. you had to play with a controller. There was no option for mouse and keyboard. Well, there was, but it was basically like, it'd be like in the old days where you had to do WASD plus the arrow keys and try to do everything in between. So, you know, it was very, very badly implemented. And this is a thing that happens across the board. Like, they really, Japanese developers have released ports that are of older games. Tales games recently came out that was old. It was locked at 30 frames a second. This is a PS2 game. It was locked at 30 FPS, and at a 720p resolution, that's it. You couldn't change resolution. You couldn't change anything. You couldn't get higher performance. And I'm not saying the Western developers don't have similar issues, because just look at early access and you see plenty of issues. But the point is, it's across the board for most major Japanese developers that have released on PC in general. When I say PC, yes, I mean Linux, Windows, and OS X, because it's personal computing. It's your personal preference for computing.
What, in a BSD?
Sorry, I figured the Unix base with OS X would please that crowd. Do you want to go with the Darwin kernel? But that is the biggest thing. So it's great that Square is trying it, and it's great to see other Japanese developers doing it. And I just hope I don't see what I've seen from other development houses that are over in Japan also kind of fold over into Linux, that I've seen on the issues with the Windows side of stuff, where it's just bad PC ports to begin with.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if anything comes of it. If Linux users aren't supportive, and if Linux users are super grumbly about it, I imagine that's probably going to hurt any future experimentation with supporting Linux.
Yeah, but on the same note, Square, why did you release Final Fantasy 13 on PC without giving me graphics options at all? That's something PC gamers prefer. That's why we gave up PC.
They're testing us. Our patience is limited.
While all gamers on the any OS are like, do it now. it's great to see more AAA developers, or publishers I should say, looking at least at Linux, with Capcom doing it, and potentially CD Projekt Red, if they ever decide to actually say anything about The Witcher 3, it'd be great, because I'd like to finish playing it on Linux, and potentially Square. So I think that's cool, but I don't hold high hope. The two topics of news that are rather interesting. SteamOS could be a better competitor to a console.
This was written by this was a submitted article. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think much of this article. I don't really agree with its sentiments. What do you guys think?
I think it has some valid points to make, definitely. The SteamOS, I use SteamOS for playing pretty much all of the games that I have at the moment, apart from the couple that just don't work on it, largely because of launches. And it does have a number of real massive irritations still. When you look at it as a gaming console, anyway, when you try and take that perspective, that I think a lot of people will when it comes to Steam machines, because it is sort of what it's being pushed as in some respects. And the main gripes for me, some of which are slowly being sorted, some of which I haven't really seen any movement on yet, are when it comes to, several people in the same household gaming off the same machine. And not just in terms of split screen, local co-op. There are definitely some massive issues there. I mean, for a time there, obviously, the Steam controllers, we have a couple of Steam controllers here, and you would have to use the same binding until a couple of updates ago, which caused a few issues. Also, the ability to log in, it's obviously on SteamOS you can attach more than one Steam account to the machine. However, what you cannot do is log in to more than one at the same time. So if I'm playing a split screen game with my housemate, for example, whoever is player one and has logged in first will get their achievements, and whoever is player two or three or whatever, they get fuck all. They're just some random
right.
And but the real irritation,
that's how it is on any console, right?
It's not, no.
No, it's not.
You can log in as your own profile on Xbox and on a PlayStation, and you will get your own achievements and such as you go, where you can use your own saves, pull up your own character if it's applicable for the game, and along the line of saves. even if it's a co-op, yeah. Things like Borderlands 2 is probably the one that springs to mind, where you know, even playing co-op at split screen, you could build your own character that could then take into single player, or you could take your single player character into it, or whatever. That all depends on the game. The real massive irritation that I've been experiencing for a number of months now, since we've all started to use the Steam machine more, and I have opened an issue on GitHub about it, that I think stuff is happening with it now, but, you know, fingers crossed on that. But that is that most games don't use the Steam Cloud for the game saves. I would say, ballpark figure, about 80% of them don't at all. They store stuff in the home directory, which is fine for a general Linux desktop, but on SteamOS, everything's run through the Steam user account. No matter what Steam user account you're logged into on the system. Right. So I would, for example, start a game in Bound by Flame. You get so far into it, someone else comes to the Steam machine, they log in on their account, they go to Bound by Flame, and all my saves are available to them. But if they go to start a new game, it will just wipe out all of my saves because the game goes, you can only have one parallel game going at any given
point.
You know, and that is a massive problem with quite a few of them. So I'm really, really hoping, if anyone from Valve is listening, please, please fix that. It's driving me up the wall.
It's not necessarily an issue with Steam. It's one of the features that they offer, which is AutoCloud. I don't know if you're familiar with that. And the idea is that instead of using the Steamworks APIs, you can give the Steam configuration thing. If you go to the Steam's partner site, you can just put in a path and say, this is where the game saves its saves, stick them in the cloud. And that's great until you wind up on a multi-user system. Like you say, you know, it might be pulling AutoCloud stuff down from a different user and overwriting your stuff that's there, or your stuff might end up showing up in your AutoCloud stuff. But there are definitely other games that don't even bother configuring that. But it's meant to be a convenience thing, right?
It is. I know that Valve have provided perfectly adequate systems to deal with this on paper. But in practice, no one seems to actually be doing it. So, you know, something needs to happen, whether that's a change in policy or whether that's, you know, some kind of supplementary scripting work that they put into the client itself to stop that from happening. Something needs to happen on it, that's for sure, because
it's a thing. Like, the idea is that, because there are people who don't want to be tied to Steam, like, they don't want to work with the Steam API, they've got their own game, and they want to make sure that it's independent. I mean, if they're doing achievements and stuff, then obviously they're already doing that. But if they're not, you know, there are plenty of games that don't. Asking people to link against the Steamworks library and make those API calls for saving, like, that's a big ask.
It is a big ask. I'm not pushing the solution onto developer side of things. I mean, there was a brief discussion about it in the Steam discussions blog when I brought it up in there. And a lot of people said that, oh, no, the developers need to do that. It's developers' fault. Message them. And it's just like, well, no, it's not really the developers' fault, is it? You know, it is what it is. This is PC gaming we're talking about. You know, it's not Steam gaming in itself. That's not really what it's known for. So, you know, Valve, I think, could quite easily put some systems in place that, you know, even if they are moving the save files elsewhere into a temporary directory within the Steam client files itself and, you know, bringing out a particular user's saves as people log in and out, you know, that would be fine. Well,
they could mount the home folder or change the home folder mounting, I guess.
Or that. Yeah, there are a number of different ways to tackle it.
Yeah, there are a few approaches.
There are. At the moment, though, the community's offerings on the matter, they're all bodges. You know, they're all, install LightDM and, you know, create different user accounts for people. And it's just like, you know, I appreciate that, you know, we can make that solution as users right now, but it is, frankly, a ridiculous solution to a problem that should never have existed in the first place when you're talking about a console PC platform.
Yeah, that's definitely a significant issue. It's funny that the things that you brought up, none of those are mentioned in this article.
And the one thing, this is what I wanted to state about this article. This is more of looking at it from an aesthetic, it almost feels like an aesthetics point of view. As I read this a couple of different times, and I get different vibes every time I read this, like playable games. Most consoles don't even have 1,900 games, just going to say.
Yeah.
Then the separation of media, boots like a console. Like, I get what they're saying. You press the button and you don't see a, you know, bio screen, or you don't see, oh, hey, look, I see.
No, I honestly don't think anyone's going to care.
Yes, but they're looking at it through the eyes of a console.
Yeah, I don't think any console users would care. I mean, they press it. it shows up. Nobody cares what splash screens show up in the meantime.
But, you know, for me, I look at a lot of this and it's like exclusives. That's not what Valve is looking to do. They're trying to be pervasive.
Yeah.
They want to make the most money possible, so they're not going to do exclusives.
Yeah,
well, I think there are other reasons as well. Like, just beyond not limiting the amount of money you can get, there's also, like, making sure that your users are all feeling looked after and equal. Like, they are a cross-platform company, so they just can't afford to do the exclusive thing.
I get where the author of this is coming from. They're looking at Steam machines through the eyes of a console user. Steam machines are basically being pitched as console replacements, more or less, or
yeah,
a PC version of a console.
Even from that perspective, I'm not sure that many of the article's points stand up very well.
The hardware confusion, I might give. You know, what quantifies as a quote unquote Steam machine? Does it run Steam?
Yeah, there's some branding confusion for sure.
Yeah. I will give probably that the most credence out of everything that I've taken out of this article.
Definitely, definitely. And you're like having the SteamOS icon be confusable with the Steam Play icon on the Steam Store is sort of an extension of some of those branding issues that that Steam machines face.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like I said, for me, I don't take a lot of credence with a lot of this stuff. I get where the author is coming from. Because, you know, well, consoles have exclusives, you know, example, Uncharted for PS, you know, PlayStation, or Halo for Xbox. I get what they're saying, but on the same note, Valve has specifically said that they're not doing that, because that's not, you know, how they see the ecosystem.
Yeah, it's funny, the article acknowledges that, but, you know, criticizes that stance.
The hardware confusion, I will probably give the most credence out of all of this, and the branding confusion behind it. That is probably the biggest thing that I took away from this.
Not directly related to that article, but you remember when the Steam machines actually launched? Have any of you played the game called Ark, Survival Evolved?
I have tried.
Yeah, I played some yesterday.
I've tried.
Well, that was kind of a tragedy, actually. When the Steam machines hit, I don't know if any of you actually checked the Ark game out. It's probably still in early access, but I quit after 20 hours. Because
I got 186 in it.
I think I played 40 minutes of it, and I stopped.
It had, like, in a Steam page, it happily pronounce it. We have full support for SteamOS, absolute controller support, fully optimized for SteamOS, and then you launch it in Linux, and then you looked at, okay, sky is missing, textures are missing, half of the tree textures are missing, trees are almost completely missing, so it was, it was so horrible. And
It's a lot better now, but you still need to make a bunch of configuration changes and launch options to make it playable, I think.
Yeah. Obviously, the Steam controller support was one-to-one mapping to the Xbox controller. But the point I want to make is that they advertised it exactly as it had full support, fully optimized for this, yet they were missing half of the features that the game actually had on its Windows counterpart. Not also, the performance obviously was horrible back then. Now the performance is good, but the game still is. It looks like crap when compared to the Windows counterpart, and definitely not optimized. So
I can get it pretty close to looking like the Windows version at the moment. Like it's It looks pretty good right now, yeah.
I will say props to the guys, the developers from that are doing Ark, reporting over having the company. God, what the hell did they just have ported over as a gameplay portion of the?
I think they really, really, really need to upgrade the engine, the version of the engine that they're using.
Yeah,
because it's ancient.
The one that's holding the whole thing back, the graphical.
Right.
Extent.
Yeah. There are also like I say that I can get it looking pretty close to the Windows version. It looks nice. It's pretty good, and I get a decent frame rate out of it. But every now and again, there are still like graphical corruption issues that show up. Every now and again, like sometimes the rain is like psychedelic. Looks like you're on acid, mad, and that sort of stuff. Or like sometimes the particle effects, like dust clouds when dinosaurs walk around. Like sometimes that looks like this multicolored explosion, and just like, yeah, it's not quite what's going on. I can't see what's happening here. But that sort of stuff feels like, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I got nearly 200 hours in it, and that's all been on Linux. So it's playable. But yeah, when it launched, it was pretty bad.
Speaking of Arc and its performance, if anyone's listening is thinking of buying Arc, for Linux anyway, one thing you should really be aware of is the system requirements that are listed are written entirely in bullshit. Like, it needs a lot more than 4 gigabytes of RAM, I promise you.
In other words, it's like running games back when Windows Vista came out. Double everything!
Oh yeah. Yeah, when they say minimum, they mean minimum.
On a machine of those specs, I have a machine of those specs, slightly higher than it, and it does not run at all. I believe that at those kind of specs, it is hit and miss as to whether it will actually run even in the lowest settings. It does not like to play when you've got limited system resources. So if you are thinking of buying it, then make sure you have at least 8 gig of RAM and a much better processor.
There's a low memory launch option you can give it as well, which I think makes the engine behave a bit better in low memory environments. That might be making a difference.
Oh, really? I might have to have a look for that.
Overall feel of that article is that is what?
I don't know. Seems to be making a fuss about stuff that's not so important. I mean, there are definitely issues at play, but the article doesn't seem to focus on the meaningful stuff.
Pretty much. It does have a couple of valid points to me. I mean, along the lines of the media separation, like between, you know, when it advertises games at you that are for Windows or for Mac or such like that, I can sort of agree with that one in a way, ish, slightly, yeah, kind of. I mean, Valve did get around to changing the store page so it didn't show you Windows games, but it still does like advertise them to you.
Only took them a year.
Yeah, it only took them a year. It's quick movements for them. No,
I don't get those news pop-ups for non-native games anymore.
Really? That's interesting, because I do. It tried to sell me a couple of them the other day. I would really, really love a way to tell the Steam client, you know, what operating systems I have and what ones I don't.
So bugger off, ideal. I don't care about this.
Exactly, you know, because it's the moment of disappointment where they're like, oh, look at this, and you're like, oh, and then it's like, oh, you know, it's... Fair
oh,
enough.
Guys, oh. The new Hitman just hit. Oh, sorry, you can't have it. Oh.
Sorry, you are on the wrong platform.
Wrong platform. Thanks for buying into it. Keep going.
Yeah. Well, you wonder if you had the cash flow to be able to afford it, if you just buy everything that's advertised to you and refund anything that's not on the platform, eventually they'll get the message.
Yeah. Maybe. That could be the solution.
Maybe. I don't know.
Microsoft Universal Apps for games.
Oh, God.
They want it in the Windows Store.
I love this topic. I absolutely love it. Can I just say, before we get into it, that I wait like an eager child waiting for Christmas for news of the Windows 10 updates to come out on Slashdot. It's like a webcomic to me. Like, once every couple of weeks, something comes out that just makes me crack up completely. It's absolutely brilliant, and this has got to be one of the best ones that they've done so far.
I think it's just, I don't know, to me it's more of the same. Like, Microsoft have been moving in this direction for a long time. They've been trying to do this sort of stuff for a long time. We were talking earlier, and what's going to happen is what's always happened, is that they're going to back down and implement some lesser thing that sets them up to be able to move another step forward in a few years when they're ready to try again.
They will. They won't give up on it. They will go for this. Whether they can do it now or not is debatable, but, you know, as I was saying earlier, they do seem to be getting away with a surprising amount of shit with Windows 10 that really does baffle me. I mean, if you wind the clock back, I don't know, let's call it 5-10 years, something like that, a lot of the stuff with regards especially to the telemetry that's going on in Windows 10, people would have gone fucking nuts over, you know, and now they just seem to roll over and they don't really care, and I don't understand that.
Well, I guess at the end of the day, like, what's going to happen is that there are people who don't care about this stuff who are going to be happy to persist with it, and there are people who do care about this stuff who are just going to jump ship and use something else.
Oh, definitely. Gaming is one of the ones that's going to make people move or stay, really, isn't it? It is integral that Microsoft get this right. And if they fuck it up, then they could cause themselves some really serious problems, which is very interesting.
If they lock games down, like they essentially are, like, example, what is it, Quantum Break, I think is something that's coming out from Xbox and PC or whatever, but it's not coming out on PC, per se. I can't go to Steam or GOG and fucking buy it. I have to buy it through the Windows Store and some crap-ass version, too.
I mean, it's okay for them to run their own store. But the idea of preventing other stores from existing on the platform is kind of awkward.
Yeah, that's where I take the issue. And I don't want to see the...
Typically what happens, like, if we think about, like, the user ecosystem, like the PC user ecosystem, is that the bulk of people don't think about what it is that they're buying. And to me, that's wrong and that should be fixed, but that's not really the issue. Like, these people don't think for themselves. They ask other people what's the best thing to buy. They ask other people, you know, what should I think about when buying stuff, or who should I buy it off? And they'll ask, you know, people who are enthusiastic about that stuff. Invariably, those people are people who are existing already in tech spaces. People like, you know, people who fixate on games and stuff are generally going to know a bit more about hardware and be able to offer good advice. So if they do alienate gaming audiences, then that's going to change the dynamics of how people adopt new systems.
I was going to say, I would be 100% honest, because on the Windows side of what I gain, I also have, you know, I have GOG Galaxy, I have Steam, I have to deal with Uplay, I have to deal with friggin' Origin, for those that want
to
know.
You can choose to not play this game, right?
In order to play the games that I would like, I cannot find them at, like, example, if you want Battlefield, you have to use Origin.
Yeah, but you, like, Origin is kind of, from that perspective, Origin is a part of Battlefield, and that's what you accept when you decide that Battlefield's something that you want to play.
Exactly, but this is my point, that you're isolating your customer, more or less. Like, the customer's choice of where to go is, if they want it bad enough, they'll accept every term under the sun to go with it, is basically what I'm saying, and that's bullshit to me. Even with Half-Life 2, I hate that it's, like, it's tied to Steam, for the most part. Or tentatively, but the and
yeah, yeah. I'm kind of surprised that people put up with it. I know I certainly wouldn't.
So the fact that I have to run, like, the only thing I like about, like, Ubisoft, and I'm not a big fan of Ubisoft, like, a lot of their games are follow the Assassin's Creed model, do the same thing over and over and climb the same building 16 different times, and oh hey look, I scan the horizon again. The one thing I will give Ubisoft, at least I can still buy their titles on, say, GOG, or I can buy their titles on Steam. Do I have to use their service on top of it? Yes, but I still have access to local spot of, you know, storefront, I guess, is what I'm saying. I don't have to specifically go to download the Uplay client and only buy through their storefront. I can go to Steam, buy a Ubisoft game. Do I have to use Uplay in order to play the game? Yes, but I can still buy the fucking game through Steam.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, there's no difference there if you got to launch their client.
But
I mean, I'd rather, like, buy something through the channel that's going to give the developers more money, and usually that's whatever platform they make. So for CD Projekt Red, that's GOG. For Valve, that's Steam. For Ubisoft, that's Uplay.
But that's kind of my point. It's like, I hate having to go through 16 different clients to buy stuff. It's just like, I just want to go to a warehouse and buy the shit that I want, and I don't care whether the fuck the warehouse is. It is kind of my point. And
I sincerely hope that this whole thing comes just crashing down on Microsoft the same way that it happened on when the Windows 8 was actually released. They advertised their store, and I was in the college back then when the Windows 8 was released, and we had this lecturer going around, you gotta learn to develop stuff, you know, Microsoft Store, this is the next big thing, you gotta develop. And I was like, no man, you're absolutely out of your mind, no one's gonna use this thing. And yeah, that's what happened. Nothing.
Well, what can you get there? What we're seeing now is a continuation of that, right? Like, it's more of the same. And while they removed a lot of the like the lock-in stuff that they were aiming for back then, they still kind of implemented a lot of the store structure and stuff.
Yeah, like the actual store structure and stuff. Now it's annoying, but I don't want to get to the point where we have essentially a lockdown system. I don't want my Windows PC, I will specify the OS because I don't want to piss off one of these users, God forbid. I don't want my Windows PC to essentially be an iPhone
Right. But the thing is that, like, every time Microsoft does something like this, they push too far and realize that they're out of touch, and then they take a step back. But they haven't, you know, they've still moved forward in with regards to their plans, and they'll still continue to move forward with future stuff, as we're seeing now.
Yeah, they will.
So this is the direction they're going in, like, whether it takes a long time or a short time. It's going to happen, I reckon.
They will. I mean, a key thing I think that we should probably keep in mind as well, as Linux users, it's really easy for us to sort of, you know, scoff from a distance and say, you know, they're going to fuck it all up for themselves. But what no one's really talking about in our community is what happens if Microsoft, hypothetically, let's say that Microsoft changed some stuff about it, and they actually make it tolerable for a sizable user base. And the next generation of Xboxes come out that are essentially console PCs, which are then, at that point, a direct rival to the Steam machine, which will be a huge problem for us.
And then you can point it to Gabe Newell and say, oh my god, he was fucking right.
True.
Or that doesn't really help the platform, though.
Yeah, it's kind of the bigger worry.
I mean, none of us really want to be able to say, I told you so.
Those that are wondering, the person that makes all these criticisms is actually Tim Sweeney from Epic. So they do hold some actual weight to...
Well, it's not just Tim Sweeney. Like, there are a lot of people standing up.
Oh, well, no. And
he's certainly noteworthy and has certainly been a vocal proponent of standing up against these things, but yeah, it's not just Epic. The whole industry is going, nah, this is crap.
It is complete and utter crap to me. Like that is the exact opposite way of where I want to see PC gaming go. Steam machines are great, but I still want to be able to change my fucking video card. Thanks.
The less exclusives we have, the better. For the community.
It's better for the customer, honestly. And honestly, it's probably better for developers because you're not locking down your audience as much. You're giving the biggest swath as possible. That's why who was it? It was Alienware when they launched the official, unofficial Steam machine that ran Windows, essentially, but it had Steam booted into Steam Big Picture mode. It doesn't matter. You're still running it. Essentially, a Steam machine is just on top of Windows instead of Linux. I mean, all depends on how you really look at, like, Steam OS and whatnot.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter because one of them runs all the games and the other one just half, and, you know.
Yeah. Touché, it's about two or 3,000 games less you can play on the Steam OS version, but the point remains the same. And my biggest thing is, I just always want the concept of how they're doing the Steam machines right now, because I want modularity in my system, so I will probably build my own Steam machine as opposed to buy one.
That was kind of what Valve was expecting people to do as well.
Yeah. And which has been nice.
But the funny thing is, though, that's something that we've been able to do forever. Something we've—I mean, I was using my PC on a TV for that, you know, for games in the 80s. Like, for me, that's been something that's been around since the beginning.
Yeah, but it's still a new concept to a lot of...
There are a lot of people who don't realize that you can just plug a computer into a TV, yeah.
Most people don't realize that HDTV is just a really big monitor where it's stuck in a shitty resolution.
Yep. Well, it's funny, like, everything's using HDMI these days, so there's not really a lot of complexity involved.
No, it's not. Is this VGA or is this DVI or is this...
Right.
It's the same plug you use in for your Blu-ray or, you know, DVD player, upscaling DVD player. For the most part, most of us think this is a bad idea.
Definitely. For Microsoft, anyway, it's great for us, in theory.
I was going to say, I, you know, as sadistic as it is, I'm happy to just kind of enjoy Microsoft being out of touch and doing the best they can to turn their users off. I'm cool with that. It's fine.
The roof is on fire. We don't need no water. You guys get the rest. Pros and cons of Linux as a gaming platform. This could be an interesting list. What you guys want to start with, pros or cons? Most people would say cons.
I like the idea of mixing them up because there are a few that are kind of relevant to each other, like counterpoints for the different bits and pieces. What do you guys think?
Definitely we should mix them up. Otherwise, we're either going to end on a good note or a really bad note. We should compliment sandwich this, I think.
Well, technically, if you end on a... If you use a pro, you're technically ending on a positive. If you end with a Come on, you're taking the ending away in negative. So either way.
All right, well, the first thing that I throw on the list is that we have awesome community driver development efforts. You know, there are people who go out there and they reverse engineer their hardware and they share their findings for everyone so that everybody can use, you know, creative branded sound cards now because of the effort of a few people who took the time to break things down and share them. And, you know, the Mesa project exists for the same reasons, and we got all these really cool drivers. But the flip side of that is that we have hardware that works well that's not vendor supported. So we got stuff that does work, and it's awesome that we have that. But the flip side, the con to match that pro, is that we've got companies who go, yeah, our stuff supports Linux, but they don't actually, you know, put any input into it. If they change their hardware at all, they don't bother to tell anyone, so nobody will know if the newer version of their thing works or not. So there's a lot of uncertainty there with regards to that. So that's definitely a downside. Whereas on Windows, for example, you can, you know, people don't think about whether or not it supports Windows. They're just like, that's the default. It does.
It's Windows.
And that's the other thing that makes me kind of sad is that the vendors don't feel obliged to provide drivers for other operating systems. Like that's a downside as well.
There is certainly a bunch of gaming specific hardware available for Windows that just has no hope in hell of working on Linux right now. A lot especially keyboards, you know, gaming keyboards designed for MMOs and things like that that come with, you know, on Windows they need a background process that sits there watching for specific signals and, you know, does its thing. And Linux obviously has no hope in hell of dealing with that. There are ways around it, but, you know, nothing that a conventional user is going to look at and not wet themselves. There is that problem with it.
Well, even beyond that, like sometimes there are utilities and scripts that you can get that are fairly easy to run, but they don't ship with the device, and that's a big issue, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you'll get like a, you know, most Logitech stuff tends to work, not always, but if people want to know great driver support, there you go. A lot of the Logitech stuff was actually not done by Logitech. Or for those that remember the time when wireless on a Linux system used to suck.
Well, again,
Broadcom chipsets.
Yeah. I mean, like that hasn't come from vendor support. That's come from communities reverse engineering hardware and
I was gonna
working
say,
out how they work.
I remember when I first used Ubuntu and you had to use Broadcom the cutter in order to rip out the firmware. In order to install the firmware.
Oh god, yeah. I used to use is it NDIS wrapper, NDIS wrapper, something like that, to install the Windows driver and wrap it around the kernel. Good God, that was a pain in the ass. It worked great at the time, but
hope to God it would actually work for the driver.
Yep.
This is why I use Ethernet. I prefer to not run wireless at all. There's too much fiddling around.
I have too many cables in my life for Ethernet.
But I bought a new mouse the other day, and it's one of those ones that if you run on Windows, the drivers install a process that watches for bits and pieces. So there are some bits of functionality that that aren't available to me, but through some Xorg configuration, I am able to get just about everything working. I can't get the second scroll wheel to work, which is kind of driving me nuts. I had a similar previous model of this mouse, which I could get it working on, but yeah, just haven't quite worked it out. And like that's a lot of messing around, you know. Like sad that we as Linux users have to go through that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's definitely a con.
And if someone's actually looking for a mouse which has a pretty well okay support on the Linux platform, then look up a Rocket mouse. Rocket is making nice, not perfect effort, but actually everything works on the mouse. Besides the fact that on Windows, when you increase or decrease the DPI, it actually says like DPI increased. something solid.
That's awesome. With that exact inflection.
But the value of that, like the real value of that, is that as a Linux user, you can go to Rock Hat and you can go, hey, I got problems. And yep. You're a customer that they've got interest in supporting and keeping on board. Whereas if if I go to Mad Catz and I go, hey, I can't get this scroll wheel working, what the hell? They'll go, yeah, we don't support Linux. Sorry.
Yeah. This is a true story. I at one point had a Acer monitor that I was having issues with. Just to use this as an example, it was an issue with the hardware. I, for some reason, could not get it to load. Like the image quality would kick out as soon as you get through the BIOS. Soon as you tried getting to Grub, MBR, any of that, it would just kick out and you couldn't do anything with it. So I'm like, what the hell? You check the cables, all that crap. Anyway, I contacted Acer support. Oh my god. They're like, oh, we do not support Linux. I'm like, it's not an OS issue. It's
not even running Linux at that point in time.
I'm not running anything at the moment. I can't see. And I'm like,
yeah.
They're like, please reinstall Windows so we can help you. I'm like, you can help me by freaking giving me an RMA, you moron. But this is...
Yeah, there have been a few times where I've had to go, yeah, I'm running Windows, sure.
But that is kind of how Linux users are treated, though. It's very, it's very second or third hand, well, reinstall Windows.
Important to support... no matter how awesome the community efforts are, and they really are cool. I don't want to belittle the work that people put in any way. Like, I think it's amazing. In the same way that I think that the work that people put into Wine is amazing and super inspiring. But I think we really need to make sure that we're supporting the vendors who do support us, because that's better for us and for the platform in the long run.
Yeah, I agree.
So, what else do we have on the list here?
Actually, to go along with what you were saying about being able to tailor your experience kind of, by configuring Xorg and all that stuff, I do like that, because you can, example, with being able to change, like, your desktop environment, like something like KDE or Unity are actually really heavy on resources. So if you're looking for performance and you're trying, better performance on your game, why do you want all the overhead of something like that? Why not install, OpenBox, LXQT, Fluxbox, Enlighten.
Yeah, yeah. This is really about the diversity of projects that are out there. Like, the fact that there are multiple window managers to choose from. How many window managers can you run on Mac OS? How many Windows managers can you run on Windows? Not so many.
Yeah. I was going to say, Windows, at one point, you would have to replace the entire desktop shell.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
God,
there aren't that many of those either.
I remember the window bins or blinds, whatever it was called, to replace the shell.
Yeah.
But that is probably the best thing that I can think of for when it comes to Linux, is being able to tailor to performance. You don't necessarily have all the back... By getting rid of, say, KDE and installing Fluxbox, you don't have all those KDE backends running.
Yeah.
I'm not beating up on KDE.
It's experience as well as performance. Like, if you enjoy using tiling window managers, then you can use a tiling window manager. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. And, like I said, you don't have that overhead, so you potentially do have performance increases in, say, gaming or
Can be definitely be relevant.
Whatever. But on the flip side, because you're looking to get those performance increases, most games currently, I'm looking at you, Borderlands, You're not on par with your Windows counterparts.
That's a tricky aspect. Like, that's totally a thing. We totally mentioned that as well. Yeah. There are a lot of contributing factors. You know, like when I said before that you know, I don't think there's much variation between Linux distros. I don't think there are, but there is quite a significant difference between the way that things work with each other on Linux versus on other platforms as well. Like the relationship that the kernel has with other software that runs, the style of interactions that happen, they're kind of different a little bit, and it's difficult to track down where a lot of these platform specific performance degradation that we see on some Linux games. Like, it's difficult to track down how much of that is the game, how much of that is the drivers, how much of that is just inherently the Linux kernel and the way it does stuff. And how much, like, whose fault is it? But then also, where can it be solved is another issue as well. Like, I recall there was virtual programming raised it with the, might have been the Witcher 2 port. There was some kernel bug, and it wasn't an issue for much. But as soon as it was brought up that, you know, the kernel was allowing stuff to work in this way, I cannot remember the specifics. But apparently Linus chimed in and went, yeah, the kernel's not allowed to do that. We'll fix it.
Yeah.
You know, stuff's not allowed to interact with the kernel like that. It's going to be fixed.
It helped. I'm not going to lie. It did help that it was a high-profile game that launched.
Yeah. For sure. But also, like, that hadn't, as I understand it, that bug hadn't really been exposed before. Like, nobody had really come across it in a meaningful way. But yeah, it's tricky to track down this stuff. It's hard to know where it is, and it's hard to know where it can be fixed. So it's definitely going to take time as we have more developers focusing on, like, high performance things like games. We're going to see a lot of teething issues, and we're going to see a lot of these issues identified and resolved, I think, over time.
I think they will get resolved over time, but currently it is definitely a con for those that are If you are, say, a pro gamer, no offense, if you want your most FPS, go with probably not Linux. Gonna hate to say that.
but there's
it depends
always
upon the game.
Yes, there's always a but.
That huge but is Vulkan. And I mean, in a perfect little world, in a perfect little bubble where we have, like, it running, the driver's basically the same on Linux and Windows, and if the game functions well, is fully Vulkan optimized, then in theory you should gain a couple of more FPS on Linux due to the fact that you don't have to run the background processes in the window manager and all those effects and so forth. So in theory, in a perfect world, it should work towards Linux, but we are so far away from that yet.
Yeah, I think Vulkan's not gonna. Vulkan's not going to be like any kind of magic bullet. You know?
Yeah.
The renderer is only one piece of the puzzle. And if people are developing on Windows and not really testing or focusing on other platforms until after it's finished development, you know, after the primary development of a piece of software is done, then it's more work to optimize it for other platforms. So you might have to change things that are, you know, significantly impacting performance on other platforms to tune it to be perfect on Linux, and that's less likely to happen.
I was going to say, basically, if you're not developing with cross-platform in mind,
you're shooting yourself in the foot, yeah.
Yeah, as far as the porting process for later. If you are going to port later, develop with cross-platform in mind.
Keep in mind.
But optimization is kind of separate to that, I think. Like, I think that's something that we don't see a lot of for Linux, is like Linux-specific optimization.
Yeah, I was going to say, like I said, I know, like, Borderlands 2 runs playably good on Linux. I'm not saying it doesn't, but when you consider the same hardware running the Windows version or on Windows, it is, you can still see the difference.
Yeah. But I guess the context to take it in is that, gaming is not the only thing that most people do with Linux or that you can do with Linux.
Yes.
So there are other things that you can trade off against that that performance loss.
Yeah, very, very true. Okay, I picked the last one. Somebody else go.
So we've had, over the past, 5 years now, I guess, we've had like an increase in distribution platforms supporting and promoting Linux, you know, sort of starting with Humble and then Steam and GOG and Gamerlith, which I think is gone now, and a few other bits and pieces. Like, we've seen more storefronts who are willing to say Linux customers are viable customers. And that's a really cool thing. Like, that's an important piece of the puzzle, right?
Very, very much so. You know, I remember when you would have to, Linux games or, you know, software for Linux, what?
When you buy the Windows version and then you download the installer for the data files.
Yeah.
That's how it used to be.
I'm looking at you, some of the older games.
OpenMW, Heroes of Might and Magic.
Yeah. So many games. Go buy the Windows version, then extract all the Windows stuff that you need don't need, and we'll install the Linux version for you. What?
Yeah, it's like you just get the Linux executable and you use the Windows data files. Like, the original Unreal Tournament was like that, I think.
I was going to say Unreal. I know Quake 3 was like that.
Well, Quake 3 you could get a boxed copy of. Loki shipped like an actual boxed version, but there were like marketing issues and funding issues surrounding all that, and it didn't end up being sellable, and it was I think that really hurt Linux so far as ID supporting them goes, or supporting us goes, and it certainly was a big blow for Loki games as well. I think that's a contributing factor in their downfall. Or at least the issues that led to that that not performing well.
Yeah, most definitely.
Sad times.
Yeah, sad times. There's a growing list of vendor support, distribution support as far as digital platforms, which is great. You know, you got the two big ones with Steam and GOG. We're still lacking some, though. I'm looking at you, EA. I'm looking at you, EA, and Ubisoft. Yeah, you're great.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that they're not here. I don't want them.
I'm not saying I want them. I'm saying, but if you are going to have support,
I'd kind of rather see. I don't know. I kind of don't like EA's practices, so the fewer platforms that EA are on, the better. The less people that they can interact with, the better.
I'm not disagreeing. I have no love loss for EA. I am simply saying there are going to be people who will say, I can't play Battlefield, or I can't play blah, blah, blah. It's the same people.
Remember before when I said I was glad that we didn't have certain communities on Linux? It's like Battlefield players are there.
Well, hey,
and COD.
But it is
a fact that it's not ubiquitous, definitely.
And it what will happen is you'll get the same argument that you get from, I'm going to hate to say this, from the Photoshop people. I can't run Photoshop, so I can't run Linux. Granted, you can run Photoshop if you install Windows as a VM. Do it that way.
Oh, no, that does not work very well at all. Like, honest to God, the swearing that I have heard from my designer friend who moved over to Linux about 10 months ago full-time, who obviously hasn't been able to use Photoshop. My God, the tantrums he's thrown about it. He's getting used to Inkscape and the GIMP now. He's the same guy that did the covering image for the podcast, actually. Oh, okay, he's a talented bastard. And he's getting much better with it, but there is quite the learning curve, and there is still quite a lot of stuff that, you know, obviously Photoshop does.
Like, if you don't specifically want to move, or change or learn something new, then you're going to have a very bad experience. Like, that goes for whether you're using, like, open source software to replace Photoshop, or whether you're switching to Linux from Windows, or whatever it is. Like, or if you're switching to GNOME 3 from GNOME 2, if you don't want the new experience, if you don't want something different, then you're going to have problems.
Yeah, definitely. People don't like change.
Yep. You've got to be in the right mindset to accept it. Yeah,
go with the XFCE desktop. It never changes, I swear.
I'm kind of curious, out of the four of us here, does anybody have a preferred platform to buy games through?
Wherever I can play them.
So like distribution platform, that is, a preferred storefront.
I will support DRM-free if I can, but most of my purchases are done through Steam.
Same here, really. I don't really care. I just want stuff to both work and to be available.
I would really love to get back to the buying gold CD and all those cases again. I know it kind of cramps up the already small living space that I have, but I would love to have those manuals and all those goodies with them.
There's a service for that.
We were talking
about the indie box early. They have link support for all the titles that they've shipped, I believe. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. I don't have a preferred platform, I guess. Whenever I want to buy a game, I kind of feel like I've got a list of platforms that I don't like, and like ranking in the amount that I don't like them. And so the first thing I'll do is so can I buy this directly from the developer? And if I can, that's what I do. But if I'm like, well, is it on Steam? Yes, it's on Steam. Well, if it's on Steam, is it on Humble? If it's not on Humble, is it on GOG? If it's not on GOG, is it on Itch? You know, like just work my way up through the inconvenience there. And like, generally speaking, I feel like at the moment, as far as like big storefronts go, Itch is probably my favorite. Like, I would rather go, if I'm considering buying this game, is it on Itch? If it's on Itch and it's on everything else, I'll go for Itch.
I was going to say, I guess when I buy games, it's kind of weird because I usually buy them through a lot of the bundled places. And personally, like for me, I would probably usually, if I do a like a bundles buy, I don't do it through Steam, or I end up doing it through like Humble Bundle. And all the money, I never give... This is going to be bad. I never give a tip to Humble Bundle, or I never give it to the charity, because I give it all to the developers.
Yeah, I don't think that Humble really need a tip right now.
No.
Well, I mean, aside from... They need advice, but I don't think they need handouts.
No. No, definitely not. I think supporting the DRM-free versions are a better... end consumer point of view. Valve is the least inconvenient form of DRM as far as platform.
Well, only get a subscription to your game. You don't actually get a copy or a license as such. So it's like a very specific kind of agreement that you're entering into there, and what you actually own is not very much.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I know what you're saying.
So you pay a one-off to have a
you're renting your game.
That supposedly doesn't have an end, but they certainly have the ability to change the terms of those subscription.
They do. My experience has shown me otherwise, because there are games that are no longer available that I can still freely download that I have purchased a EULA for.
Yeah. But there's no guarantee
that
Valve is going to change at some point in the future. And that's an issue for a lot of people, I think.
For those that are in the Linux community specifically, see how this...
Yeah, I got to say, like, I remember when Steam for Linux launched, I was really surprised that Linux users were very comfortable with the idea of embracing like a large DRM platform. That was really surprising to me.
I think it was more...
They were so happy it just worked.
Yes.
Well, say, yeah. In theory. In theory, even it just worked at the time.
Like, everybody was just anticipating it so much.
As I said, they've been anticipating Steam since, like, 2006. Let's be honest.
But yeah, like I expected just a little bit more resistance and a little bit more kind of, it's great to have you here, but we'll support developers directly and get DRM-free versions. Thanks.
When you have the person responsible for GNU/Linux, God, I hate that fucking term.
Gosh, do you remember that? Everybody was like, oh, Stallman is terrible. He hates Steam. It was like, well, actually,
no, he said it in context.
He's like really positive about it.
I was going to say, he's like, personally, it's not preferred, but it's good for the platform is basically what he said. Is really what he was saying boiled down to.
Yeah. He was like, in the long run, if it brings people away from proprietary operating systems, then it's a good thing. Which I thought was amazing, because he's very...
black and
principle
white.
Principle oriented. You know, like he's like, this is the bad stuff, this is the good stuff, and you got to go for the good stuff, because if you don't, then you let a lot of bad stuff in. And I totally respect that. I think that's really cool. It's great to see that people are like principle oriented and ideal oriented. I never ever thought that he would say something like what he said about Steam, about this whole kind of like, well, if it's a gateway for people to get onto Linux, then that's great.
Honestly, it's almost about the same. It's this almost the same approach he took with like Android. He's had plenty to say about Android since, but he's more or less said it was a small step in the right direction. As far as not being locked down into like a Windows type deal, but So that's the vendor stuff.
Are there any kind of downsides to vendor support or lack of vendor support that we can think of that kind of correspond with that? I mean, we mentioned that there are some stores that aren't here yet, and
you pretty much. I was going to say it's more or less nudge. More of the con is that you're not going to have every store available. I mean, honestly, and for some people that is a con. I'm not saying that's a for some people, that's a pro.
I do think that it's kind of sad that I think stores like Gamerlith, who kind of did the kind of thing that GOG do, where they say, all right, you want to do the Linux version of your game, just give us the binaries, we'll do all the packaging, we'll do all the stuff for you. Like, they're very hands-on with that kind of stuff and looking after their the developers who go through them and look, trying to make sure that Linux users get the best experience. It's kind of sad that that the incursion, let's say incursion, of like very dominant platforms in the Windows space like Steam and GOG have kind of pushed some of these people who've supported Linux for longer out of the scene.
Yeah, I was going to say I definitely agree. It sucks.
It's kind of like Skullgirls lands on Linux. Everyone's like, yeah, your fighting game. And then like a month later or a few weeks later or something, it's like Street Fighter is announced and nobody cares about Skullgirls anymore.
Yeah. Until it goes on sale.
There's too much happening all at once. You know, it's a good thing. Mm. But, it, you know, there's always new stuff being announced every couple of days. And, you know,
I was going to say, it's a limited platform. Yeah, let's be honest. We're still a small segment platform. As far as in comparison to the rest of the PC industry, as far as gamers, we have a sizable market, but we're not that big. I mean, let's not overstretch our reach here.
We're still small, but at least we haven't encountered such horrible DRM deals as Windows has encountered in the past.
If anyone, hello, secure ROM.
Yeah, we don't have any secure ROM here.
Securom and of course the legendary Star Force.
Which, oh my god. Burn, die with fire.
Which actually received the crack by the name of Star. Starfuck.
Yeah.
So that was good.
When your software installs at Ring Zero.
Yeah.
Yeah, Star Force is a rootkit.
Yeah, it really is.
It was interesting. It stopped one of my I had a CD drive at the time, and it killed it, stopped it from working.
Same here.
Yeah, same here.
Which, you know what's funny though, the game that did that for me, X3.
It wasn't even my computer. X3. Wow.
X3. The game that I now play on Linux, DRM-free. Thank you, EgoSoft.
So in the Linux community, we are at a bliss right now. In comparison,
that's a pro. We don't have much crazy DRM.
Yes, Steam.
But the con is that it's on the horizon, right? We don't even have the like the Steam Wrapper DRM, which is like this other layer of DRM that Steam can do, where it generates like a account specific binary that it does checksum against.
Yeah.
So the idea is that you can't just copy junk between machines, and even if you do manage to crack it, it's gonna. If you try and run it on someone's account who doesn't have it, then it's gonna know about it and it's not gonna be able to run. But we don't actually have that. It doesn't work on Linux, from what I understand.
The lack of DRM is definitely a plus. DRM nightmares, shall we say, of past Windows experiences. there is definitely that.
So I guess there's a point here about priorities. Kieran, did you want to talk about that? Like in terms of the driving forces behind the platform?
Yeah, I thought it was a good one to add to the list because it ties in nicely with, you know, the whole discussion about changes to Linux as it becomes a more viable platform for gaming, and obviously the fuck twattery that Microsoft are up to these days. But you know, it's much better to have a platform and, you know, invest your development time in a platform that is guaranteed, because of its nature, to evolve towards the needs of the consumer primarily, but obviously secondary to that is the gaming industry itself. You know, there is no central authority that will turn around and say, well, we're changing our distribution system, so suck it. You know, it's much more reliable to, considering the amount of time and effort and finances that go into building a game, you know, I would much rather personally be shunting stuff towards Linux than I would be building stuff for a platform that is entirely out of my control.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I use Linux.
That is the key right there, though. Having a platform that, I don't want to say the industry controls, but take the consumer side out of it. Having a platform
there are stakeholders who make decisions that are in their own best interests. I mean, like, people who are very unhappy about System D, and that is something that I think Red Hat have been, like, sponsoring the development of and kind of pushing. And that's been adopted by other distros. They made the decisions themselves, but certainly there have been corporate interests at play
We can't lie and say that there aren't corporate interests, because let's be honest, a lot of Linux development is core Linux development. Let me rephrase. It's not just hobbyists that do this. People actually get paid to develop on Linux, believe it or not.
Well, that's part of what makes the ecosystem so interesting.
Yes, and that's the thing. It's like, you can have the, I'm just going to do this in my free time program, or you can have the guy that you pay, you know, £200,000, you know, dollars, whatever you want to use for money equivalent, to code for Linux.
It's definitely a pro that we don't have, like, one single entity that is making decisions about the direction of things, and that there's more of a chance of consumers being able to play a role in setting the needs and the understood needs of what the platform needs to be and where it needs to go.
I still think the main issue with the Linux side right now is that is the lack of the market share we have actually on the still on the desktop side. Sure, we could have a huge increase of users on the desktop if we had like a really exclusive game, like let's say GTA 5 came out on Linux like half a year before it released on Windows, right? We would have huge gamers there, but what good would it do in the corporate world? Nothing, basically. So, but the problem is there that we cannot push the corporate side of business in that sense. That, let's say Mac has all the Microsoft Office applications, and let's say, well, they have the Link or Skype for Business, as they call it right now, which is our main communications channel between many companies, right? So what I do, I need to boot up my virtual machine with Windows 7 to get to Link. Or I could use Sky, but Sky is so buggy that I prefer to boot up my virtual machine. So we need those corporate technologies or applications on Linux. That would really give us a push. So people need to know more about this, and we kind of have to get more of these corporate applications on Linux. That would really give us the boost here. But
Do you feel like we need to have Link, for example, or that we need to have Office? Or do you think that we need software that fills those roles that can be adopted on other platforms as well?
We have LibreOffice Suite, and actually, I must say, it works just fine. I can do almost everything with it on a corporate level as well, but the communications part is the real pain point here. We could use Outlook Web Access, which is pretty good now, but it's not the same as you have a native Outlook client, right? And we need that Link client, so or Skype.
Yeah. I'd rather live in a world where Link and Skype didn't exist.
Yeah, you guys remember when the Skype was updated and we can no longer have those video calls? That sucks. Yeah. That really sucks.
I'd stopped using Skype by that point, so I didn't mind so much. Isn't it sad that that seemed to be a shortcoming of Linux rather than another company's fault? You know,
that's more of a perception thing, though. That's more of a.
It is.
That's not a shortcoming of Linux. It's a shortcoming of Microsoft not supporting a platform that a piece of software previously supported for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the thing is that actually, as you know, Mac is fully supported in that sense, but the Linux is not. And I don't actually think that Microsoft feels threatened by Mac OS. It more feels it's something that I can work with. I have lead on them, so it's kind of like Nvidia and AMD. But I personally think that due to all of these circumstances that have been revolving around for a couple of years now, Microsoft might be actually threatened by the growing number of Linux users. And that's, we might be small, but I really think that maybe they're like thinking, we're not going to develop to that platform. We're not going to just do it because they might take it over because they already have the server space.
I was going to say, well, it's not just that. It's more of a business decision as far as how... No. I mean, as far as how they're trying to integrate Skype into everything. You know, you have it in Office. You have it in Outlook. You have it in, Xbox. You have it in blah, blah, blah. It's in everything.
Yeah.
So that is something that they are trying to do, which is annoying as shit.
I do give them props for one thing. With Windows 10, they probably snatched from Linux the most useful feature ever, multiple desktops now integrated.
And yeah, but it's a bastardized version of it. It doesn't work very well.
But they do have actually one additional feature which I have not found on Linux yet, when you snap the window, let's say to the left side of the screen, it automatically asks you which one do you want to snap to the other side of the screen. So this is one of the features that I'm really looking forward to in Linux.
You know, I kind of like being able to attach a window. I mean, I'm using GNOME Shell at the moment. I don't know what other window managers do, but if I bump a window up against the side of the screen, it'll take up half of that screen.
Yep.
And then whatever I've left on the other side is still visible. So, yeah, I'd kind of be irritated if I only had the option to have one thing on the other side.
That's the one thing I did like about running KDE 5, about how you can instead of like half and half, you can actually divvy it up into quarters of the screen. Which is I actually do like that.
Works on XFCE as well, nicely. But the window spread is a must-have, and I miss that on XFCE so much.
So the lack of decent corporate-backed software, I guess, as far as communication tools.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the cons at the moment, at least.
My biggest gripe would probably be the lag behind in, I guess you would say either Xorg or Mesa, lag behind in OpenGL. Defaultly, isn't it like OpenGL like 3.3 or something still? Because the world.
I thought all the drivers had OpenGL 4 support now.
Not all of them. I'm using Mesa on my other machine, and my housemates all have AMD GPUs as well in their machines, and they're obviously using Mesa as well at the moment, and it not really work properly. One of those APUs, it does support OpenGL 4.1, but the driver is so poorly optimized at this point that nothing runs to a playable level, and the other two systems, it's OpenGL 3.3, and you know, anytime you try and run anything, it just goes, no, you need OpenGL 4. So...
Wow.
Well, and that's the thing, like, games are becoming, like, especially OpenGL games, you need 4. I mean, what was it? Metro 2033 was like, hey, you need... Basically, you are required to run on OpenGL 4, at least, bare minimum.
So it looks like Mesa got OpenGL 4 support in September last year. But this is one thing that I guess does become an issue for differences between distros, is like how quickly distros adopt that stuff. I mean, obviously they don't want to like throw it in there straight away because it's good for things to have time to mature and be tested before they're rolled out to all users.
Fedora at least got them pretty quick, and I know Arch gets them even faster. Obviously,
they get because I know the new LTS or Ubuntu that's coming out is getting 4.1 for OpenGL.
That's right, but it's not. I don't think it's quite as definitive to be able to say, oh, as of this version. You can say as of this version, it supports OpenGL 4x. Yeah, okay, but there's still a limited amount of cards that's actually true for. There are a lot of other components, as far as I've come to understand it, in the Linux kernel and some other areas as well, that are required to sort of complete that package and make it work on more and more GPUs. I think it's only really the sort of, you know, bigger cards right now that all actually work at OpenGL 4 sort of levels to a semi-respectable degree. It's going to be, I think, a good another 6 months to a year, I think, before, you know, generally you're pretty safe to use Mesa with an AMD system and be able to rely on it working properly.
And that's the thing, though. That's been a consistent issue with Linux, though, as far as the lag behind an OpenGL. I remember when it was, like, OpenGL, I think just generic 3, it lagged by, you know, it was, like, 3 generations behind with OpenGL 3.3 or what, you know, it's just like, holy crap.
This comes back to the vendor thing as well, like how many vendors are contributing to Mesa?
It's really just Intel, isn't it? I mean, AMD does some, but...
Yeah, like the contributions are kind of minimal that the dominant video card developers are offering, and at the end of the day, if their stuff doesn't work, it's not necessarily Mesa's fault or Linux's fault. It really is up to the vendors to be making sure that their shit works on Linux, I reckon.
Oh, definitely. I think it would have been really nice if AMD had, you know, maybe bothered to keep Catalyst alive and at least vaguely runnable on modern Linux systems before they decided to shit-can the whole thing while they worked on something that wasn't finished yet. You know, that would have been good, but oh well, live and dream.
That would have made sense. When has AMD made sense?
So the other thing that we had down here, which, again, I think is a bit of a pro and a con at the same time, is wine. You know, I mentioned before that I thought it was really impressive, the amount of work that goes in, and I think it's really cool. But, yeah, what do you guys think?
This brings up the native, non-native debate.
Sort of. I think the native versus non-native debate is kind of useless in general.
I think it's
like
pointless.
Support matters way more. If someone wants to support something in Wine, then I don't care. You know, as long as they're happy to fix problems and come up with resolutions, then that's all that really matters. I don't care what's running under the hood.
I don't give a damn, honestly, as far as how it's running. I think Wine or Wine-like things, like even things like Crossover or whatnot, I think at the end of the day, they can be, I don't want to say a gateway, they can help people get the jobs done that they need to get done. So I can honestly...
It certainly makes migrating easier.
It definitely does. But then again, there are aspects that people can do to actually make migrating easier to begin with anyway. I.e. not rely on certain programs, rely on cross-platform programs, Chrome, Firefox, etc.
I got to say that I stopped using Windows in 2006. Like, I haven't installed Windows on any personal computer since then. And being able to play certain games under Wine, like I was kind of lucky in that all the games that I like either had native versions or ran happily under Wine, and that was an important and worthwhile thing for me.
For a lot of people, it's really important because it allows you to feel like the stuff that you have invested in, say in software, as an example, you can still use. You don't have to basically throw out the baby with the bathwater kind of thing.
In general, like Wine works really well. Like it's certainly improved a lot from like 10 years ago.
Yes,
gotcha.
The Wine's development has really been nice ever since they branched out with the staging patches. I personally have always used the staging patches, unless we're dealing with Resident Evil games, which work like shit without it. Or with it, sorry.
I run vanilla Wine, and I like have done since StarCraft II started working in the mainline. Before that, I used to have like a separate custom build to get that running. But yeah, since then, had no problems with just running straight Wine.
I was going to say, personally, when I do Wine-like things, I either use, Wine Tricks or Play on Linux. Those are usually the two things that I use personally.
Oh, definitely. The front ends, like Play on Linux and like toolkits like Wine Tricks, to newer users especially, Wine is completely inaccessible without those things. It is too much of a learning curve for them. They're just, you know, stone-faced and dribbling by the time you're done explaining like all the things you have to install to make something go.
I never found Play on Linux to be useful at all. Like Wine Tricks is cool because it gives you the ability to like run stuff with just a couple of command lines. Like if you want to install the Visual C++ runtimes, it'll grab the bits that you need and ignore the bits that you don't, and it's all good. You let it do its thing. But yeah, I never saw much value in Play on Linux.
Well, the other advantage to it is that, you know, with Play on Linux, again, especially to a more inexperienced user, it will obviously automatically segregate everything into its own Wine prefix, which is what you should be doing, strictly speaking, with vanilla Wine anyway. But most people don't know that and don't bother to do that. And obviously it causes them all sorts of problems, you know.
That's the point.
I have three, and I kind of like, I don't have individual applications in each of them. Like one of them has Steam, and that's got a billion games in it. But yeah, I got separate stuff. Like I run StarCraft 2 in its own thing, and I run Telltale's games in their own thing. Like usually stuff from the same vendor, I'll run in the same prefix. But like, prefix management, I mean, like you say, like it's not obvious to new users, but once you know about it, it's not particularly difficult.
It's not. I mean, it's simple enough to explain to them, but, you know, when they're already trying to get their head around Wine and installing the dependencies to get something to run, you're then trying to give them the commands for vanilla Wine to, you know, create a prefix and set that as the current one, and it's just...
I was going to say, you got to remember, these are the people coming from Windows or even OS 10 that are going to look at Linux and say, what the hell is a distribution and why there are 300,000 flavors of it? Unfortunately, having worked on the tech support of a call center, I tend to treat all users, regardless of OS, as idiots.
In a tech support situation, that's probably best. Always assume PEPCAC, that's what I do.
Yeah, so PEPCAC. That's for problem exists between keyboard and chair. I kind of feel that, because when there are two or three of us that started up the Steamlog community a long time ago, and we were all Wine users, we were all people who ran Steam in Wine. I kind of feel like having Wine around has allowed a lot of existing Linux users to be already present on Steam when Steam for Linux launched. Like, I think that probably helped a bit. We had, 3,000 members in the Steam group before Steam for Linux launched. Like, it was already, you know, fairly dormant, I guess, because it was just a kind of like, yes, we would like this, rather than, you know, people who already use Steam on Linux because it didn't exist. But just that in itself, like, there was already kind of a critical mass there ready to receive it.
So I think Wine has its place as a tool, means to an end, to... Realistically, does it get people onto Linux, then who the hell cares?
I think there are kind of like aspects to consider that do have kind of negative ramifications. Like, if you're buying all of your games to run on Wine under Linux, then if a Linux port does arrive, or if a developer's considering a Linux port, they can look at it and kind of go, well, I think my Linux market is already serviced. You know, like, it removes or potentially removes the perceived value in actual support. And if a developer is saying, yes, we support this running in Wine, then that's fine. I feel like in the long run, they're probably going to end up doing native support because that gives them more control. But if it's just a case of you can get it running in your Wine, but we're not going to support you, then that's ultimately not a good relationship to be in as a consumer.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many people remember Trans Gaming? Sega.
I do. Sega.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember?
Well, they were the equivalent of Feral and Aspyr and stuff, right?
No.
In terms of the relationship that they had with developers.
Maybe. I'm not too sure about the relationship with developers. As far as I was aware, they were just sort of a commercial
Wine company.
They also worked with developers to get specific titles running and stuff. I think they would try and get actual fixes to make things behave happily in Wine.
But anyway, my point was, how many people remember when EVE Online was announced as a supported title from Transgaming? That support ended up getting dropped after Transgaming and went with was it Cedar for Mac OS X or whatever. EVE or CCP Games dropped that relationship on Linux, and they said, just run it in Wine. Yeah. So it's like, wow.
Well, if that's supported, that's fine. You know, like, if they're willing to say, if you have a problem, we'll sort you out, then that's one thing. No. They're saying, you're on your own, then that's another.
That is what they were saying. They were like, the official support has ended, basically. If you want to play this, try it in Wine. They're not saying they're supporting Wine.
Good God, that just makes them totally redundant at that point, really, doesn't it?
It's really bad. Uh-huh. So, like I said, I think Wine has its place. I can see how it can be counted for or against as a Linux user, you know, as far as market share and all that stuff. But... the guys that do all the work online, you guys kind of crazy props for me, because screw that.
It's a lot of work. It's an incredible amount of work that project represents.
Also, on the somewhat related topic to this, the other emulation options available on Linux, like PCSX2, like PlayStation 2 emulator, I've had couple of good tries and runs with it, like Fatal Frame 3 for an example, which at least on NVIDIA proprietary drivers, it actually runs way better than on its Windows counterpart. So I'm wondering if maybe it's something to do with OpenGL, maybe somewhat better for that. I don't know what rendering the PlayStation 2 actually used. At least I'm just throwing it out there.
I think there's a couple of them that run a bit better on Linux than they do on the Windows counterpart. They've certainly had better results with, is it PPSSPP?
How much of that is likely to be coming back to the optimization thing I was talking about earlier, where I'm going to guess that lots of contributors to these sorts of projects are running Linux, and so that's what they're testing things in, that's what they're developing in. So it's inherently going to run a bit better here.
Quite possibly. I'd assume in the case of PPSSPP especially that there are probably a lot of people developing for it on Linux, because they say recently that they were planning to put in Vulkan support at some point in the near future.
Wow. That's nice.
It'll certainly be interesting.
Yeah, no doubt.
And as we mentioned earlier, like Vulkan is a pro as well. Like that's an API that appears to be designed with some level of Linux support explicitly in mind. You know, drivers are a little bit slow to come, but it's still good to know that we are being considered.
Let's be honest, though. Any new API is going to be slow in the in the driver end of things.
Well, I think that we live in a different time now. Before, we've never had it. Like the stuff shipped now for Linux right now, like the Talos Principle, can play in Vulkan. That, like, when did Vulkan come out? Like a month ago?
Yeah, it was about a month ago, a month and a half ago.
Yeah, so like the time to adoption there is insane, and we live in an era now where a large portion of the industry is using like pre-made engines, pre-made middleware. So there are all of these like middleware renderers like Unreal 4 and our Unreal Engine 4 and Unity and CryEngine and all the others. As soon as they adopt Vulkan and have Vulkan support, then potentially anybody using that platform or anybody comfortable upgrading to the current version of that platform immediately has access to that. So the pervasiveness and the adoption rate is going to be higher than we have ever seen anything like this before.
I think the really important thing that it comes down to with Vulkan, at least short term for us as a gaming community, is how easy it is for developers who are used to building on Windows to be able to use it and sort of step away or work alongside DirectX. The boss put up an article, was it yesterday or the day before, with one of the developers for Ashes of Singularity, Dan Baker, who said that it's... I haven't actually looked at the API myself, so I'm just basically going off what he said. But he said that it was very, very similar to working with DirectX and was very pleased about how easy it was to work with. So, even for a drop in performance short term, in theory, it could see a lot more native Linux ports appearing just because it's easier for the Windows developers to work with.
And if you have an API one side we have DirectX 12, which is close to two platforms, Windows and the Xbox One. So on the other hand, we have Vulkan, which will be implemented by Nintendo. You have Linux, probably at some point maybe macOS, though they have their Metal, so I'm really shaky about that. But
I really feel that many developers are probably going to end up using like abstraction layers above Vulcan, because Vulcan is very low level. And Ryan Gordon, which I imagine most of you are familiar with, put out a couple of tweets a while ago, and he was talking about the size of the spinning cubes example in the Vulcan SDK is nearly 3,000 lines of C code, right? Wow. Actually, it's a lot, but you know, it makes a bit of a difference. And then he sort of shared a spinning cube example in OpenGL that was 78 lines. So I kind of am going to imagine that there are going to be these pieces of middleware that evolve. I don't know if they've been written yet. Maybe some have, maybe some haven't, that abstract away the direct Vulcan calls and replace them with a lot of convenience methods for common things, and that's the sort of stuff that we'll see most developers who are making their own engines starting to adopt.
Basically, just let's keep our fingers crossed and see what the future brings us.
Yeah. Hmm. But either way, the gaming scene on Linux actually looks pretty good. You got Vulcan, you got games coming out all the time. Too many to keep up with for the market share that we have, but hey, that's a good thing.
Dirt Rally, the hype is real.
According to SteamDB, probably.
Indeed.
But other than that, I think that pretty much covers everything I wanted to talk about today.
Cool.
Sounds good to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Episode one.
It's been a fun chat. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Right. It's been awesome.
Yeah. See you guys later.
Have a good one.
Cheers.